everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. Today we are joined by Eamon Costello from Dublin City University, and Eamon is an old friend. And Eamon, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. It's lovely to be here.
So Eamon, we met down in the CESI conference, Computer Education Society of Ireland conference, in late February, the last Saturday in February. You were there, you were given a talk, AI in the Classroom, AI Literacy for Times of Digital Perma-Crisis. And we were chatting away and we said, listen, we need people to hear what you're talking about and the work you're doing. It's fantastic to have you here and thank you for taking the time. Will you share a little bit of your own background and your journey into DCU and where you are in DCU at the moment?
Well, I started out working in the e-learning industry. I was a software developer around the time of the dot-com boom, and there was a huge, well-known for its big e-learning industry, and I was programming and multimedia development, stuff like that. And then I transitioned into higher ed, and I went back and I got graduate degrees and things, and ended up here in Dublin City University. And I was essentially a kind of a digital janitor. I was plugging in the tools and putting them to bed at night and sweeping the digital floors and all that kind of stuff. And I did that for a number of years. And all of a sudden, I was kind of teaching and I was sort of on the other side of the fence. I was in distance learning at the time and adult education. And now I'm in our Institute of Education here in Dublin City University. I'm an associate professor on the staff here, and I'm working with student teachers and working with graduate students and doing research and writing about all things digital learning, anything with a bit of technology and a bit of education in it. And for egregious sins in a past life in Tipperary, I'm working on AI, unfortunately. It's like an AA meeting where you have to say, I too am working on AI.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good way of introducing it. Obviously, you have this rich background that you are bringing to your work, and you're a fantastic writer and a great presenter. And one of my colleagues, Pat Brennan, was at your session in Limerick and thoroughly enjoyed it. But I just want to go back to that, and we'll start there and we'll see where it takes us. You were presenting on a project, AI Literacy in the Classroom. I believe that project is kind of coming to the end of its life, but you might tell us a little bit about it, who was involved in it, what you were doing, and anything that you learned from it or things that you learned. I'm sure you learned lots from it.
Sure. Well, it's a project in our ADAPT research center here, and it's with a number of colleagues. Eileen Cullity, Michal Wizery, Yelena Bradovich, Laura Grehan, the whole team of people here who are working on it. And I was only feeding into it, so I cannot take much responsibility for it. It was a big team effort, and I just kind of swanned in and did some of the good-looking bits, right? Don't tell anyone this. We can edit this bit out, right? But a lot of people did a lot of
work. You always need someone to swan in, Eamon, believe me.
But there was it was a really great team of people to work with, first and foremost. That's why I decided to get involved in it. And the other reason was because quality of the people, the team they're involved, but also because I felt that teachers needed some help understanding AI in their practice and what they were going to teach their students about it and whether they would use it or not and in what ways and so on. And I felt like I had something to contribute in this regard, and it was very interesting to work on. But it was a really good opportunity for me. The main thing I got out of it was I got to talk to a lot of teachers. We did a lot of workshops. I got to talk to a lot of student teachers, practicing teachers, principals, all sorts of people from different parts of the country, hear about what AI meant to them, how it was showing up in their schools and their classrooms and their practices, what their anxieties and concerns were. For the most part, that was really, let's be honest, it's not something that we were like saying, I just would love something to come and completely disrupt my practice and throw everything into chaos, said no teacher ever. So it was really about that. But also one of the valuable things I took from it was to see how schools and teachers and the learning ecosystem we have in Ireland pulls together and works through these things. Was quite a powerful thing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. On another project that I'm involved in, a colleague, Colin de Helaguera from Nantes University, calls AI an unwelcome guest. And I think you've touched on it there. And you mentioned that you were engaging with schools and with, you know, student teachers. I'm probably using the wrong term there now. But, you know, teachers who are in college and who are preparing to go out into the big world of education. What kinds of discussions were you having with them? I mean, you mentioned decisions there, you know, should I use it? Could I use it? Where should I use it? Why should I use it? where should I not use it? Were you having any of those kind of discussions with them, Eamon?
Yeah. From the time the project started to when it ended, there was quite a change in the guidance that was being provided officially to schools by the Irish government and associated bodies. So those conversations were kind of changing as we went along. And for better or for worse, we were sort of policy borrowing and looking at some of what our neighbours were doing across the pond in the UK and a lot of the GISC guidelines in particular. So we were kind of drawing on them. And some teachers are quite frustrated saying, well, we've got all this advice from other countries, but we don't have any. And I sympathize a lot with that. But also, the other side of this is evaluating, not jumping and reacting to these things all the time as well. And I think that's the kind of the way a lot of the policy has unfolded in Ireland. It's kind of like, it's quite a cautious and considered approach. And there's actually some value to that as well. But to come back to your question, so one of the things we did was to ask people, if you were to devise an AI policy for your school, what would it look like? And who would be involved? What do you think would be appropriate uses of AI? What would be inappropriate uses and so on? And this was now before they had the current device, which does talk a lot about policy. And it actually, it's kind of basically a policy of policies policy, because it says, look at your other policies and draw on them. And then we had a bit of fun with it as well, saying, you know, come up with a policy that would absolutely destroy your school, and kind of think about policy a bit more lightly in this sense. Because sometimes people hear policy and they immediately shut down and they go, oh my goodness, this is just reams of stuff on our website.
I'm just interested there. And of course, we have guidance now that was published last year. There's a promise there from the Department of Education and Youth that they will continually update that. I wonder, from the discussions, is it that they want a policy, or is it they want guidelines, or do they want a mix of both? Did you find, Eamon?
People want guidelines big time, but I'm always kind of trying to resist giving people guidelines and toolkits, partly because I'm just an annoying person, Michael. So if you ask me for something, I don't want to give it to you, right? I kind of have a natural resistance to giving people too many scripts and things. And teachers need that, right? My teachers come into me and they say, Eamon, teach me how to use these tools so I can use them in class. I can use a digital learning tool. I can differentiate my feedback. I can find out a class of 20 people, how they are doing, take the temperature, use that as diagnostic feedback. And that's brilliant. And that's part of my job. But it's also my job to say, right, when is it appropriate to even use a tool? Why are we using these tools? What are they doing to us? And what's the opportunity cost of using these tools? And what are the other sides of it? And how do we think about these things? So it's a little bit the same when I'm thinking about guidelines and policy, insofar as everybody wants guidelines and recipes and a script to follow. But that's a part of education for sure, but it's not all we're about either. And we need to be careful of getting too scripted, or we're sort of like stuck following something.
Yeah, well, I'm in total agreement. And what I'm hearing from you there is that what you really, and I presume you're pushing this with your facilitating, is a better verb, with your learners in DCU, is that you want them, first of all, there is no easy answers here. There's a number of different ways of looking at this thing called AI and framing it and having discussions. What I'm hearing is that you're facilitating them to have critical or informed discussions or decisions about these technologies and where they might fit and how they might fit, and for them to consider some of the pros and cons in a much more holistic way than just, oh, it saved me 5 minutes or 10 minutes here. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. The efficiency narrative that it's going to save me time is a big one. So I do a lot of, I often talk about this, and this is a very important part to interrogate this, to look at the research, to say how much time will it save me and so on, because there's a long history of time-saving devices. And if anything, a lot of AI creates a huge amount of outputs, so it's able to output stuff instantly. So what that says to me is we're just going to have more and more paperwork. We're going to have more and more work because people can produce it faster. So they're going to be giving it to us. So instead of saying it takes me a day to send Eamon this form, I'm going to send him 10 forms now. And he's going to fill in them, and that'll keep him busy. And sure, he can use AI to fill them in if it's too much work. And not to be too fatalistic. But also, sometimes there's a kind of an idea that you're saving time with something, and there's a certain limit as to how much time you can save on something. Those limits kind of bottom out, and you also have to be careful that you're not just doing a really crap job at something by saving time. That's not good either. So,
No, I agree. I think, you know, there's this kind of narrative that's there that the job of teaching, and I used to be a primary teacher myself a long time ago, and the job has changed completely almost since my time, I would argue, and particularly in terms of admin work and the amount of paperwork. And, you know, I'm actually coming more to the view of maybe we should look at that and take away some of that paperwork, and rather than, as you said, give AI, you know, just because there's a kind of an assumption that there would be a knock-on benefit to give you more time for the kinds of things we should be doing. But anyway.
That's what I say. I say, if you want to save people time, give them a four-day week.
Yeah.
Lock them out of their computers at lunchtime. Make them turn off their devices at 5 o'clock. Don't allow them to do any work in the evenings. That will save people time. Everything else is not addressing any of the bigger problem. If you save 5 minutes on this, but your work conditions are the same, and we're creating new policies to deal with AI, and the policies are exploding.
Yeah. And I think that's a very interesting point that you made there as well, that from the start of the project, because I'm involved in a number of projects on AI, well, actually, let's be specific, generative AI at the moment, because we're finding that particularly in Irish schools, there's more use of generative AI than other kinds of AI tools. What we're finding is that things are changing so fast that some of the tools that we're using, they're developing so quickly that issues that were there are not there 6 months ago are now there. So you're almost kind of here learning on the fly or adapting on the fly because we're not dealing with this stable set of technologies.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I kind of alluded to this in the title of the talk about this digital perma-crisis, where it just seems to be we're constantly in crisis mode because of, as you're saying, having to adapt to technologies all of the time. And I was given a talk recently at the Central European University in Vienna. I was about to give a talk there and I was very nervous and I was sitting in my hotel room foostering on the laptop for hours on end, tweaking my 150 slides, right?
You've learned from Mark Brown with the 150 slides. Yeah, go on. Yeah,
150 slides. I'm not kidding. I would have that many. And I was creating new ones.
I've seen your slide deck. I can tell the listeners you're a good man, but you cover them fast.
I counted up all the products that OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic had released. Chatbots versions, and they had 66. And I put a whole list of them and I put them into CapCut and I created a nice animation of transitioning between them all. And they're not like version 1, version 2, version 3, they're version 401x.2. You name it, we got it, you know? So they're not kind of tools of science that are sort of progressing in this sort of linear fashion. They're just really designed to make us kind of excited and to make them desirable, to make us buy them. So that they're hacking into our kind of desire. And this shows up in the products, because the products themselves, if you're talking about generative AI, they're not designed to tell the truth, if they could, right? Maybe there's some technical limitations that prevent them from doing that. But even if they could, their core purpose will be to keep us using them, keep us coming back, keep us in the algorithm for as long as we can, because we know this from the research on social media. So there's that kind of element to it. And then the other thing that's kind of useful to think about on this one is that when you have all these versions of 66 chatbots, and we're supposed to be kind of adapting to these every 5 minutes, and that's too much because we have like academic terms, semesters in a school, in a university, and those are actually tuned to the seasons. They've evolved from the seasons. We've got summer. We've got winter. We've got time for recovery. We've got time for planning, you know, teacher burnout. We've got time to think and create and all this kind of stuff. And we have these plans and cycles, and they're based on the sun and the moon and our connection to the land, this earth. And now we're in this thing where we've 66.
I know. Yeah.
And it's not natural. It's not good for us. But one last thing to say on this one is about the reason there's so many of these products is because they're not designed to last. And this is another idea about this idea of how effective they're going to be, is that they're not necessarily designed to be enduring. There'd be no money in that. And they're also being possibly hobbled. So you could be buying something and you're buying it from a pipe. So you have no idea what's actually happening at the top of the pipe. You're just getting the output and you're trusting the people at the top. But it's the same model that you were using as yesterday. You're just trusting them. And you're assuming that you're getting roughly the same output. But we know, like, there's a famous case on the iPhone where they issued a software update to older iPhones that degraded the battery life. Do you remember that one?
I do, yeah.
And it made the battery life much worse on the older phones to make people upgrade. And they put it into the OS on purpose to slow down the old phones. And we could be in this situation with AI where we're buying into these tools, we're building our pedagogies around all of these products, and then they start making them worse so we can buy new ones. That's a dystopian vision.
But I think you're also raising there, you know, this whole idea of sustainability. And I mean, you know, this is a word that's used a lot in education today, and there's many elements of sustainability that touch off AI. I mean, there's the whole from the environment side of things, but there's also the one that you've touched on there, which is the cost. And how are we, you know, I'm thinking of people like Neil Selwyn and others here, you know, how do we develop models here that we're going to be able to afford these? And if they keep changing and getting us bought in, how can we do this? And if we're thinking at scale, then at a school system level or at a European level, you know, there are some real issues here about what tools we're using, why we're using them, how we're using them. And actually, are they at the end of the day, is it a good thing, going back to your earlier analogy with the seasons and all that, is it actually good for us and is it good for our learners?
Yeah, I mean, you're saying, is it good for our learners? There's a kind of interesting thing that's happening in schools now where we have these two contrasting discourses about technology. On the one hand, we're buying these pouches that you lock up your phones in at the start of the day. This stuff is so dangerous, right? You have to drop it into these bags and lock it up. And then on the other hand, we're saying we've got practically the same stuff, but we're bringing it into the schools and now it's perfectly safe and it's completely different, but it's sort of made by the same companies and it feels like a lot of the same stuff to me. So we're in this kind of weird space where we're kind of confused about what technology is and where it ends and where it begins. And it's
just building on that idea. And I, you know, again, I think you're so right. I mean, the phones, the social media we've touched on, and we should be learning lessons here with what's happening in the whole area of AI. And, you know, but your project where you started off, you know, where we started off this podcast is on AI literacy. I assume that the premise there was that you would try and equip teachers and school leaders with a literacy so that they could actually engage in critical discourse around these technologies. And what were some of the key ideas in that program that you developed with your colleagues in ADAPT? What were some of the key, I suppose, elements of literacy there that you were trying to develop, and how successful was that?
Well, we looked at a range of things around history of AI, of ethics of AI, bias in AI and algorithms. Eileen and Michal gave great presentations on these topics at the workshop. And Eileen Cully does a lot of work on media literacy and AI literacy. And Michal's kind of in the ethics and philosophy space as well, but also just practical things of how these tools show up, what they look like, and so on. What is AI? And it's quite a challenging thing because once I got to the end of the project, Michael, I knew what I should have done at the start of the project. I was like, now I know.
Well, now you're going to tell us what that is, because that's valuable learning. It's a bit like Eamon. I know you're a tip man. I'm a carry man. I mean, it's a bit like if I was starting the journey again tomorrow, I wouldn't start from here.
I thought you were going to launch into It's a Long Way to Tipperary, right? So I'm not going to start singing. You'll be glad to know.
Save us that one for another time.
What I'm thinking about is, right, when I was talking to these people, we're having all these conversations, and everybody has a different AI. It's not one AI. There's many AIs. So I tend to think of it as plural. And I take pressure off myself as a teacher as well, Michael. And I say, it's not my job to fix education. It's not my job to teach everybody AI. I'm like, I don't have the answers to this, but I'm not stupid either. And more what my job is about is seeing, can we keep widening the conversation about automation? And I'm drawing on Professor Emily Bender's definition of AI from her book, The AI Con, which kind of marks me as a bit of an AI critic now. And I should say as well that I love tools. I love technology. I've written software. Absolutely love AI in terms of technical capabilities and so on. I'm not like someone who thinks it's something awful, or I'm not against all people that use AI or develop it or whatever. But she talks about educational AI as automation. And that's her definition. And once you use the definition, so looking at an AI literacy course today, reviewing it, and it's saying AI is a tool. So as soon as you kind of nail your colors to the mast, I've talked about it being a product. Is it a product? Is it a tool? Is it something social? Is it something scary? Is it something human? Is it a partner? Is it a thought partner? Is it a co-pilot? Is it a friend? Is it kind of have a relationship with it? So it can mean, it can be lots of things. And I think the main thing I learned is that we can have better conversations if we understand that a bit more. And we say, right, what are the ways it shows up for us? What does it mean to me in my practice? And how can I understand what it means to other people? How can I read documents better that are talking about AI? Or if I'm going into a conversation about AI with a stakeholder that I think is very important, what are their lenses? What are mine? How can we find a bit more common ground? Or we will maybe just disagree, but we at least we know why.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think, you know, this widening the discussion on automation is probably a very important piece of the discussion. And I also agree that, and I struggle myself sometimes, how are we framing AI and what are we actually talking about? And I think, you know, we need to be a little bit more specific in our conversations sometimes on this. But I think the key point that I'm hearing from you is that, first of all, well, there's a history here of technologies in education going way back, and there's a lot of work has been done in that space. People like Larry Cuban and others have documented it. So this is not the first time we have this new technology or, you know, that's arrived, technologies that have arrived into the world of education. Again, that notion of the unwelcome guest. What I'm hearing is that ultimately, those in education need to really start having discussions about this and critical discussions, and having those also, I'll throw into the mix, that they're having them in a civil way, that they're not roaring and shouting at each other. And your other point there, which I fit myself in that camp as well, is that when you're being critical, like you suggested, that doesn't mean you're being negative. I think sometimes we're trying to be a little bit too binary here. Are you pro-AI or are you anti-AI? I think that's certainly not helping anyone. But I think being critical, if I'm hearing you, is having these conversations. They're informed. They're not these kind of general ramblings. It could be a maths teacher looking at how they might use a generative AI tool with their students, and then the students also feeding into this. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a highfalutin conversation, but at least people are kind of going, did that work?
Exactly. And like you're talking about these kind of pedagogical beliefs and disciplinary specific places. And like for me, I just have to stay in my lane because I know nothing about maths. You could tell me 2 and 2 is 5, Michael. I would take it on faith, right? So I have to say, defer to the AI of maths expert. And like you say about the specifics things, you know, so say if we're talking about generative AI, one of the things that I have been doing some work on that is very interesting to me, which is around metaphors of AI, the metaphors of AI, because it's a very helpful way to have these conversations, you say, and you can get people around and get them to kind of examine their own biases and assumptions, but also their own, surface their own abilities too and skills. It has to be, as you say, not just completely negative. It has to be looking for positive things too and honoring the solutions that people are already finding in their environments. If people are out there doing some good things with the tools that they have, who am I to criticize them? But Emily Bender, in her book, she talks about, calls LLMs, large language models, or generative AI, things like ChatGPT, she calls them synthetic text extrusion machines. And I guess this is like, I don't know if you like sausages, Michael.
I do, a big fan, yeah.
Well, here's one for you. You know, using AI is like eating sausages. You don't want to know what it's made from or what it's doing to your cognitive agency. So there's a nice extrusion metaphor. But she uses synthetic text extrusion because it's not, she's trying to get away from this compelling language that it's talking to us, that it's saying things, that we're chatting with it. You know, it's literally just letters streaming out and we're sort of making sense of it. And it's just garbage. It's just sausage meat. So that's one of her metaphors.
Well, just on that, and I really liked, you know, I think you're getting in there to the whole thing of anthropomorphism. You know, I think this is something that's very worrying, actually, that the language that has built up around, you know, even going back to the early days of AI and now, you know, this human-like and, you know, that, as you say, we're having a chat. And I just think, I like it, actually. I like what Emily Bender is saying there. You know, there was a number of academic papers in the early stages when ChatGPT arrived and they referred to them, and I think this is what she's saying in nicer language, that these are bullshit generators.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you mentioned the Greeks there, Michael, and you'd be a big scholar of Greek. You'd know all about Plato, program language, for automated teaching operations. It's an old piece of software, Plato, you know. Me, I'm just a humble Tipperary man. I thought Plato was a Greek washing up liquid.
But
the
Greeks, I was more Latin myself, no, I have to tell you, but go on.
The Greeks had this great word, anthropomorphization. Anthropos is a man and morph is a shape. But when I was talking to some students recently, they said personification, which is a much better English word. So I should delete that and go back. Because clarity and simplicity.
That's a lot easier to say, Eamon, actually. Personification, that was going to be my new word there. Yeah, go on.
But this idea of giving personhood to things, and it's kind of incredibly, we think and see in people, I fundamentally believe. That's just what we are. It's people all the way down. You know, we can't get away from that. But also, it can be hijacked and used against us in many ways. But yeah, bullshit engines. She talked about that too, or others. I mean, this is Harry Frankfurt. He was the philosopher. His 1989 treatise on this topic on bullshit. And it's basically, it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong. It's sort of a Trumpian idea. It's just who's doing the talking. And you just got to keep talking and saying things. And that's a very, very powerful analogy for generative AI. And there's been multiple papers on this. I wrote one myself that has the modest number of citations at this stage, which is very gratifying. And there is a kind of almost epistemic nihilism that creeps in where people say, oh, I threw that into ChatGPT and it gave me something. I didn't even bother to read that. I'm just going to fire that into an email or onto a website. What's the worst that can happen?
This is fascinating, and I'm just watching the clock here. And again, thinking about just what we've been talking about for the last 30 minutes, where do you see this going in education? AI in education was one of the key themes of your talk in Limerick at CESI. Where do you see this going? And I know crystal balls are quite dangerous, but where do you see it going? And what are some of the things we need to keep developing with our teachers, whether those teachers are in pre-service or they're in service? And thinking about those conversations that we want to have. From your perspective, what are some of the things that schools could be doing? I know they're not going to be doing them now, coming to the end of the school year. But anybody who's listening to this maybe in a couple of months' time and they're getting ready to go back into school, where do you think they might start here in relation to this area? And I'm going to use your AI in the plural here.
Well, prediction is hard. Especially about the future, as someone once said. So I'm not going to make too many guesses on that front. The CEO of Duolingo, I don't know whether you heard what he had to say this time last year about AI. He said, AI is a better teacher than humans, but schools will still exist because you still need childcare. And he's not wrong. Schools will continue to exist and they will continue to evolve human beings caring for each other.
But yeah, and I saw that, yeah, that was May 2025. But I wonder how the work we do. I mean, most of the AI discussion is around work. And even now, can you see it impacting in any major ways on the work of the school and particularly the work of the teacher and the school leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the main thing is teachers are grappling with how students are using AI. Yes. And how they can essentially kind of safeguard a lot of their learning and their discipline from effectively cheating and dissembling on the use or shortcutting of learning or cognitive offloading or these things. So those, we haven't really solved that problem yet. To yes. many respects. And this kind of thing, we're talking about the AI changing all the time and it's rapidly changing. I'm not sure it actually is. And I think some of the problems with the technology and the limitations of the technology, that it's kind of error prone or it's biased, but the problems are just greater threats to education that it poses in terms of the ability for people to create synthetic things that they haven't done or pretend they've done things that they haven't, or somehow even believe themselves they've done something that they haven't. Just they see the output, they go, oh, I did that now, but they don't even understand what it is. So those dangers haven't gone away and they've been kind of apparent for the last few years. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more work around that. You know, I think they're probably, I wouldn't be surprised if there's more rumblings with unions and with teachers getting together on the ground and possibly reacting against some of the official narrative that it's fine, Eamon Costello gave you AI literacy training, you're all tooled up, now the problem's solved.
Well, look, I think that's a good place to finish. I agree. I mean, I think what I'm hearing from what you're saying is, well, I mean, if you've done the AI literacy, whoever provided it, if you interacted with it, it's a help, but it certainly isn't. And I think we're only starting now as people are beginning to really think, again, this overused word at the moment, critically, about what they're doing and the implications on many fronts, that we're starting to have conversations. And I think it's what's wonderful about the project that the ADAPT Center in DCU and Google and others were involved in, is that it is actually addressing the lack of knowledge or the lack of understanding, and it's giving people a starting point. And I'm sure that it's opened up many interesting conversations among teachers and in schools. So I think well done. And I look forward to having you back again at some stage, because no doubt this is an area that you're going to keep working in and active in.
Super. Thanks, Michael, for all that. It's been wonderful talking to you.